People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. You will have noticed recently I've been saying on the air how much I'm looking forward to the GNS Society's production of The Pirates of Penzance, Gilbert and Sullivan's great operetta, comic opera, and I think one of their most popular as well. The music director and conductor of this production is Alistair Coburn, who's been with GNS for some time now, but we'll get there eventually. Alistair, first of all, welcome, and good to see you here again.
Thank you, Rodney. Nice being here.
I hope you're having fun with all the rehearsals.
We are. Hectic, but we are having great fun.
How long ahead do you start, by the way? It is an amateur company, so you've got to work harder.
We started in the last week of March with music rehearsals. We run those for about 4 or 5 weeks until the end of April, and then we start what we call the blocking rehearsals after that, just literally setting all the scenes. And for the last 2 weeks only, we've been actually now running the whole acts and now running the whole show.
When do you move into the theatre?
We move into the theatre next week on Monday, and we've had 3 or 4 rehearsals there, and then we're on the show.
Yes, because you open on the 4th, Saturday the 4th, and run until the 12th of July. Do you agree that this is one of the sort of evergreens of the Gilbert and Sullivan genre?
Actually, yes, I do. I love Yeoman of the Guard as my favorite. And I was trying to toy what would be the most popular GNS. Now, sometimes people say the Mikado, and I always used to think so. But, the way tickets are selling here and reading up about it and so on, I would now possibly debate that Pirates is probably their most popular show.
Yes,
it's been done so many times in so many different ways that I think it actually lends itself to that.
But, Alistair, as we were just saying before we came into the studio here, you have a bit of a story. It has a story, doesn't it, how the Pirates of Penzance actually came into being, not just a glamorous night at the Savoy Theatre in London.
No, it was actually quite fun. HMS Pinafore had been playing in London. That was the predecessor of Pirates of Penzance. Mm-hmm. And Gilbert and Sullivan decided they were going to go over with the entire company to New York to actually do the authorized version there, because they were scared that people were going to actually now, change the
authorized version of Pinafore.
HMS Pinafore,
right,
yes.
Right.
And that was going to take place in October 1879. But in the meantime, Sullivan had already been working on the script that Gilbert had given him for Pirates of Penzance. So in London before that, he had actually composed all the numbers for Act 1, and he had already started on Act 2, and he thought, well, while I'm in New York, I'll actually conclude and finish Act 2, because they were going to then present Pirates of Penzance for the first time, the premiere in New York, on the 31st of December, 1879. But what happened was, the whole company goes by ship. They arrive in New York, and when Sullivan unpacks, he discovered he had left all his manuscripts behind in London. So he panicked. He thought, well, there's no way I'll get them here in time. So from memory, he had to rewrite the whole of Act 1. And he said, obviously, he made a few changes on the go, and write Act 2. And he worked furiously. He said, until 48 hours before the actual opening, he was still busy composing the show. And the company had to learn the songs and everything in that short time.
Yeah.
But there were a couple of other very funny things that happened. Just before the opening, about a day before, the orchestra went on strike. And they said, we are not prepared to play this as an operetta because the music is too difficult. This is an opera, and we want bigger fees. And Sullivan said, okay, go on strike. We'll delay the opening, and I'll bring the Royal Opera House Orchestra over from London to play. So they quickly relented and they said, okay, well, we will play after all.
I didn't know that story. I knew the other one about him forgetting, but I didn't know that one.
And then, of course, the funny thing is, the actual overture, Sullivan was composing it up until 5 a.m. on the day it opened. So the orchestra had to rehearse that in the morning in order to play it that evening. Things were left till the last minute. I don't know why.
They were. But and besides all that, it was an immediate success, wasn't it?
It was a huge triumph, yes. Yeah. The New Yorkers loved it. And going back to London, it was about April, I think, the following year that they finally opened in England. So it had its premiere for the first time, one of the GNSs in New York.
That's quite a thing for GNS, because as I said, we always think it was in London. But
can you imagine, traveling with the whole company and everything on ship, and probably would have taken 2 weeks or more, you know, to get there. And that must have been quite a frightening exercise.
But imagine having to sit down and start from scratch again. I mean, obviously he knew from memory a lot of the stuff, but I wonder what the original sounded like.
There's quite an interesting little thing I must just mention, that evidently on the wall of the hotel where they stayed, there's a little plaque, and it says, "On this spot, Arthur Sullivan composed The Pirates of Penzance in 1879, and it's still there today, I believe.
Oh,
I haven't seen it, but I read about it, and I believe it's still there.
Something to look out for when you go to New York.
Something to look out for, yes.
English in New York. We were talking about it being one of the very popular ones, which I think it is. It's just got the most delightful music.
It has.
But Pinafore was also a huge success, wasn't it?
Yeah, Pinafore was fantastically successful. I think it ran for a longer period than Pirates. But Sullivan actually preferred Pirates.
Oh, did he?
He actually wrote after the opening to his mother, and he said, "The music of this show is infinitely better than the pop music of HMS Pinafore."
But and it is it's a more meaty score in many ways, isn't it? It's a comedy, but it's nonetheless more meaty.
You know, the one beauty of Pirates is there's very little dialogue in it. There's long stretches of through composed music moving from one number to the next.
Right, like the very long Act One finale.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
But very, very beautiful. That Act One finale is quite stunning and ends on a really big high note.
It does indeed. We're going to hear something of that a little later. Mm-hmm. But I'm intrigued by your choice of music, and I see you've chosen for your first piece, Alistair, the Ruddigore Overture. And like me, I'm also a great fan of the Yeoman, and I like the overture to Yeoman very, very much. But I think Ruddigore is a great overture.
It's a beautiful overture, and we actually played it very successfully with our own orchestra here in Cape Town, the Cape Philharmonic, in our anniversary concert for our 70th anniversary. Actually, Rodney, you were the compere.
I remember that.
And I thought, well, it would be rather nice to let's feature our own orchestra playing the Ruddigore Overture.
With you conducting.
With me conducting.
Right, here's Ruddigore.
Thank you.
always a joy to hear. The overture to Radigor, the comic opera by Gilbert and Sullivan, played at the 70th anniversary concert of GNS here in Cape Town, with the Cape Town Philharmonic conducted by Alistair Coburn, who is my guest here talking about the upcoming production of The Pirates of Penzance. And let's concentrate a bit on your production now. You said, we said it was slightly more meaty than HMS Pinafore. It's also longer, isn't it, than Pinafore? I mean, yes. In the greater scheme of things.
It is.
But tell me...
But not all that long, Rodney. It's actually amazingly, I timed it last night, and we're running at just on an hour for Act 1, including the overture, and about 55 minutes for Act 2. So that's not a long piece.
No, that's not long at all. But you were saying something intriguing to me when I said to you just now, so, Alistair, what's the production like? Are you prepared to give anything away?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me say, musically, it is totally classical. We have not deviated at all from the original score. We're using the classical orchestra, and the songs have all been done exactly as Sullivan wrote them, except that we have added one song in, which was done by a popular version, Joe Papp, many, many years ago, which we may talk about in a moment, the Matamata Trio,
yes,
which is
from
absolutely
Radigal.
Hilarious, and we've added that into Act 2, in the middle of Act 2, and it works exceptionally well.
I'm sure it will. In that Joseph Papp production, it worked extremely well, didn't
yes.
it? In the middle of Act 2.
That's
okay, and then what does it look like?
Right, that's something different. It's actually an incredibly vibrant, very, very energetic production, a bit wacky at times, but our new director that we haven't worked with before, Daryl Spikers from Somerset West, he has got the most incredibly innovative ideas, and he likes everyone to be busy all the time. So it's a very, very busy production. He also has a little troupe of dancers who actually keep that going while the rest of them are singing, and we have all sorts of weird and wonderful props. I mean, I'm not going to give anything away, but when you see it, you'll be very intrigued indeed. You think, how did he pack all of that into this production? I think the audience is going to enjoy it.
Okay, because there's the thing with Gilbert and Sullivan, isn't it? They're the purists who like it to be as D'Oyly Carte did it, and today looking quite wooden and old, which doesn't really work, I don't think,
well,
anymore.
Well, if they close their eyes, if they're not 100% happy with what they see, they will hear a beautiful score and beautiful singing. But I tell you, visually, I think it's going to be very exciting. I'm sure it is.
You know, when I first came to Cape Town, the first production I saw by the Society was of HMS Pinafore. And I remember that having a slightly... It had a bit of a twist, that particular production.
We did that. Teddy Davies directed that, and we called it HMS Pinafore, the nautical musical, but with an emphasis on nautical. And we actually did copy a couple of ideas from an Australian production where they do these big up-tempo versions of the Gilbert and Sullivan shows. Mm-hmm. And it was actually great fun. It really was. And we added quite a bit of extra music. There were songs from other shows that we added into that one and so on.
Okay.
So I'm glad you remembered that.
I do. It was my first taste of GNS in Cape Town. But this one, as you said... It's the original music, the original scoring, the original songs,
yeah.
No messing about.
And to say we've got a lovely orchestra playing, unfortunately the Cape Philharmonic wasn't available. They have moved their annual leave from December now to July, so they were not available. So I've had to put together an ad hoc orchestra, which we've called the Cape Town Sinfonietta.
Ah, yes, I saw and that. I wondered what that was.
A lovely chamber orchestra. In fact, there are quite a few of the CPO players who are playing, mm-hmm. moonlighting while they're on holiday because they like to earn a bit of extra cash.
Yes.
And some fabulous players. I've got a couple who actually were principal players in the old Cape Town Symphony Orchestra, and some of them are coming out of retirement and playing for us. So I'm very excited about this.
So the actual sound of the orchestra will be nice
and
full.
Exactly the same.
Will be
full, yes.
What we hear from Sullivan's score. And what about the cast? Are you prepared to give anything away? I'm dying to know who Frederick is, Mabel.
Well, the cast are very interesting in that very, very new to us. It was wonderful. We had the most amazing auditions, open auditions. And in fact, we auditioned over 120 people, which was the first time ever for me in a Gilbert and Sullivan to have so much interest shown. And as a result, we've managed to cast some wonderful people. We've got Frances van Vuren playing Mabel. She's a Cape Town opera UCT opera graduate. And she's stunning. She's got a most beautiful voice and a lovely, vivacious person on stage.
Because that role has its coloratura moments, doesn't
That's
it?
That's right, it does. It's a difficult role to sing. Yes. And then a young man, I'm not going to give you all the names, but a young man playing Frederick, he's actually a graduate from Stellenbosch University and studied singing there. And we have got, as the Pirate King, our friend Stefan LaRue, who's also a graduate from Cape Town Opera. Yes, there are quite a few newcomers, a wonderful new Major General, which you'll see eventually. I can't think of actually one single person who has been on the boards for years and years like we used to have in the past. They're nearly all new. Even the person playing Ruth, she's doing it totally differently, and she's a wonderful actress, Julie Dixon. She runs her own drama studio in Tableview, and she's playing Ruth as a very energetic, high-profile type person, you know, with lots of activity and pulling out guns and threatening to shoot people and so on. So that's the part of Ruth.
So unlike the Ruth we are
totally
used to.
Unlike the normal Ruth, yes.
And then you've got a very good chorus, and you have had for a while.
Chorus is huge.
Have you swelled it up a bit?
We've got over 60 on the stage, so the stage is going to be very, very busy. The chorus is big. We couldn't get enough totally daughters, because the daughters have to be obviously girls in their teens and early 20s and so on. So we've supplemented the ladies' chorus with some chaperones. So there's a few slightly older ladies, and they are there very dignified and keeping the daughters in check on stage.
Okay. And do they? But they also sing as
they
well?
They also sing. Oh, yes, they do.
Okay. Yeah. Just reminded me now, are you in the Opera House or the theatre?
We're in the theatre.
In the theatre. Yeah. Okay. I think that's important to know. And that stage, I think, you would prefer, because the Opera House is a bit large, isn't it?
It is. It's almost too big for an intimate piece like Gilbert and Sullivan's, you know. So the theatre is ideal. I'm so glad we've had it this year.
And acoustically, it's fine
it's
as
wonderful.
Well. It's perfect
it really
for
is
what you're doing.
It's a beautiful theatre. I love the Artscape Theatre. I must just mention that the chorus is made up of a very, very big band of pirates who are incredibly fierce and intimidating, but in actual fact very gentle and sentimental at times.
Which goes along with the story.
They even drink their sherry out of little sherry glasses because they are actually sophisticated men of breeding, which we'll find out towards the end. The girls are skittish and a little bit naive, you know, and desperately interested in all these pirates who are showing interest in them. And the policemen, of course, are the normal bumbling idiots, you know, are terrified of their own skins and going into battle. Whoa, this is fearsome, you know.
It's a lovely scene, that, from Act Two. And I think we're going to hear it, aren't we, when the foeman bears his steel. Shall we listen to that?
Yes, that comes from Act Two, and it's a wonderful chorus in that Sullivan actually had a most amazing device that he used to combine sometimes two or three different melodies or different choruses virtually into one. And this is a very famous example where we actually have three different songs almost going on at the same time towards the end.
Towards the end. And this is also from your 70th anniversary. So
Correct.
This is your company singing.
That's
this.
Right, our company singing.
Thank you. evident. These attentions are well meant. Such expressions don't appear. Calculated men to cheer. Who are going to meet their fate in a highly nervous state. Still to us it's evident these intentions are well meant.
Go and do your best endeavor, and before things we sever, we will say farewell forever.
And the reference select to our chance of coming back. Still, perhaps it would be wise not to carp or criticise, for it's very evident these intentions are well meant.
Yes, it's very evident these intentions are well meant. Evident, yes, well meant. Evident, ah, yes, well meant. For the world is even on.
Well, always a favourite chorus there from Act 2 of The Pirates of Penzance, when the foreman bears his steel with the ladies, with the pirates, with the policemen, everything there, as Alistair said, three melodies going at once there towards the end. And that was the GNS Company from their 70th anniversary concert here in Cape Town, conducted by my guest, Alistair Coburn. And Alistair, the policemen, they were really given free rein in that New York Joseph Papp production, weren't they?
They were. In fact, I think ours is very similar. Daryl likes that type of activity, so he's got these policemen really playing it up to the hilt.
Yes. And it must be because they've got to be so different from the
Absolutely.
Pirates.
They are so comical. I sit there and I've seen them many times, and every time I laugh at what they're doing.
Good. Actually, I see, but your next piece of music, which is only a minute long, less than a minute, Hail Poetry, comes from the end of Act 1, and is a great sort of a cappella piece. Just tell me about this and why you want it in.
It is a very beautiful piece. It just shows you the contrast that Sullivan was able to include in the Pirates of Penzance, from really up-tempo numbers to really a beautiful choral moment. And this is a lovely moment where suddenly the pirates are now actually reflecting on the fact that, you know, life is not all about pirating and stealing and fighting. There are moments of beauty where poetry actually takes precedence, and the full company sing this very beautiful choral piece, which is, as you say, only 1 minute long.
And the lead into that is them saying, what would life be without a touch of poetry in it?
Absolutely.
And here we go.
Thank you.
it's certainly rousing. A good sing for the whole chorus there and soloists, which is called Hail Poetry towards the end of Act One of The Pirates of Penzance. There again, we heard the chorus from the 70th anniversary concert of GNS here in Cape Town. And my guest is Alistair Coburn, who's conducting and has been conducting for a while at GNS, haven't you, Alistair?
Yes, it goes back a long way. I think I started with GNS in 1975.
That is
so I've been going over 50 years with them.
Gosh. But now, next year is a very important anniversary for GNS, isn't it?
In 2027, we'll be 80 years old. The society was formed in 1947 with a production of Yeomen of the Guard in the City Hall, I believe. And since then, there has been a GNS society in Cape Town ever since.
And you've had a production pretty well every year, haven't you?
Almost every year. I think the only break we had was during COVID.
Yes,
unfortunately,
yes.
We had about 3 years when there was nothing. And that did cause a little bit of a, you know, fall away. It's wonderful to see the people coming back and wanting to do things again.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a while, you know, to get going again after a break like that.
Am I right in saying that you were scheduled to do the Pirates of Penzance when COVID came along?
Absolutely. We scheduled once and then we cancelled it for COVID, and then we planned to do it again, and for various reasons, which I won't go into now, we couldn't find actually a really good enough Mabel, someone that had their coloratura type voice. Mm-hmm. So we cancelled again. This time we have got the right Mabel.
Third time lucky, in other words.
Absolutely.
But the society is completely amateur, isn't it? But you managed to put on amazing productions because they also always look good. The costume's always good. The set's always good. The singing is generally very good.
We do go into a lot of detail on the look of the show. I mean, and we've got professionals that do work on aspects of the show, like Michael Mitchell, our very, very well-known designer for opera and ballet
in
Cape Town. He has designed the sets for this, which are so pretty. They're like little picture book pop-outs, you know. So it suits the style of the production. We've got a wonderful lady that does our wardrobe and so on. And actually, we are very lucky also in that Cape Town Opera have been very good to us. When we do need something glamorous and so on, they do allow us to borrow from their opera costumes. So, and there's a reciprocal arrangement because they wanted a policeman's helmet for their My Fair Lady last year, and I lent them one of our policeman's helmets.
Yes, there you go. But that's good to know, because very often there can be all sorts of animosity between companies.
We have a lovely working relationship with everyone in Cape Town.
Good. And do you have your own kind of stock of costumes? And
we do, a very large stock. In fact, we're very lucky. There is a corner of the huge wardrobe, but I don't know if you've ever seen it. I think I need to take you out and show you one day at the Artscape facility in Epping.
Oh.
It is a massive warehouse, and there are literally millions of costumes there. And we've got one corner where our GNS costumes are kept.
Oh, that's very good. And earlier on you said you were very happy with the people who came for auditions. You did 120 auditions. Generally speaking, do you have age limits?
Well, yes, you have to actually cast according to what Sullivan and Gilbert were asking for.
That's true.
That's what I say. The daughters should be younger girls because they're all daughters of the Major General. He would unlikely have had a 50-year-old daughter when he's only about 50 himself, you know.
Exactly,
so that's
exactly
how we got around about including some chaperones.
As you said, right. And then with things like learning the music, bearing in mind that they are amateurs, do you have to do lots of what they call note bashing
we
at
do,
the beginning?
We do. Your principals often are pretty capable of learning a lot on their own, although I do coach them, but they come very, very well prepared. The chorus largely have to be note bashed. Many of them don't read music at all. They talk about the little black dots on a page.
Okay.
But fortunately, this year we do have a couple of people who have joined us from the Cape Town Symphony Choir and the Philharmonia Choir, and of course they read music and they're very, very good. So it was nice having these extra people involved.
Are you always looking for people for GNS?
Always. We are very open to auditions. You know, if people are interested, they must just contact us or keep their eyes open for when we advertise auditions.
Mm-hmm. And I doubt then whether you turn anyone away, unless they're useless, of course.
Absolutely.
And you yourself, Alistair, do you enjoy, you must surely enjoy the scores and the music of Gilbert and Sullivan?
I do, you know, Rodney. It goes back a long, long way. I was a very young lad and I hadn't learned music at all from about 12 years old when my aunt actually introduced me to Gilbert and Sullivan. She loved going to the old shows at the Labia Theatre by the first group of Gilbert and Sullivan Society people. And she one day bought a recording of The Omen of the Garden. I just fell in love with that music. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, this is interesting. I want to learn music. Went to my mother, and my mother was very open, you know. Yes, of course you can. We found a piano teacher, and I started learning music. And eventually it became my career.
Well, in other words, Gilbert and Sullivan was responsible.
You can say the Omen of the God was responsible for my career in music.
Which you've done relatively recently here.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I have noticed since I've been in Cape Town, that you don't always do Gilbert and Sullivan. You sometimes venture out for musicals.
It's about 20, 22, 23 years ago, we decided to actually branch into some musicals as well, typical Broadway, West End musicals. The main reason was because it's very difficult to actually make a profit and make any, even often not break even on a Gilbert and Sullivan production, because the audiences are a niche audience that, you know, they don't normally go to a show like that unless they love Gilbert and Sullivan or opera. So we decided to start doing musicals, and it's been a huge success. Every second or third year we put a musical in, and we've made some very, very good profits on them. I think the caliber of musicals we've done, particularly shows like Fiddler on the Roof, My Fair Lady, Annie Get Your Gun, and then the last big one we did in 2019, South Pacific, which was a magnificent production. They are lovely to do. I love the musicals as well. I really enjoy them.
So I see, looking at your list here, that we've got an excerpt from your production of My Fair Lady from 2016. Tell me what
that was. A fabulous production. We so enjoyed doing it. Carla Thorburn directed, and we had a fantastic cast. And Nick Plummer played Henry Higgins. He was absolutely superb. He just understood the music. Of course, he is a trained musician himself. I don't even know, but Nick Plummer was a trombonist in an orchestra in the UK before he came to this country. So he was able to communicate with me very well on those finest nuances in the Henry Higgins singing. And, of course, we had the wonderful Cape Philharmonic Orchestra in the pit, the full orchestra, which is quite rare to have a musical these days in Cape Town with a full orchestra in the pit. Often they paired down to 12, 13 players and a few synthesizers and so on. So we were very, very proud of that production. And I thought, let's have I'm an Ordinary Man.
And this is with Nick Plummer.
Nick Plummer singing I'm an Ordinary Man.
I'm an ordinary man who desires nothing more than just an ordinary chance to live exactly as he likes and do precisely what he wants. An average man am I, of no eccentric whim, who likes to live his life free of strife, doing whatever he thinks is best for him. Just an ordinary man. But let a woman in your life, and your serenity is through. She'll redecorate your home from the cellar to the dome, then go on to the enthralling fun of overhauling you. Let a woman in your life, and you're up against a wall. Make a plan and you will find she has something else in mind, and so rather than do either, you'll do something else that neither likes at all. You want to talk of Keats or Milton? She only wants to talk of love. You go to see a play or ballet and spend it searching for her glove. Let a woman in your life and you invite eternal strife. Let them buy their wedding bands for those anxious little hands. I'd be equally as willing for a dentist to be drilling than to ever let a woman in my life. I'm a very gentle man, even-tempered and good-natured, whom you'd never hear complain, who has the milk of human kindness by the quart in every vein. A patient man am I, down to my fingertips, the sort who never could, ever would let an insulting remark escape his lips. Just a very gentle man. But let a woman in your life, and your sabbatical is through. In a line that never
ends comes an army of her friends, come to jabber and to chatter and to tell her what the matter is with you. She'll have a booming, boisterous family who will descend on you en masse. She'll have a large Wagnerian mother with a voice that shatters glass. Let a woman in your life. Let a woman in your life. Let a woman in your life. I shall never let a woman in my life.
I'm such a fan of My Fair Lady, Alice, I must say. And there we heard Nick Plummer singing Higgins' song I'm an Ordinary Man from the 2016 production of My Fair Lady with GNS here in Cape Town. And I do remember, Alistair, that that was a spectacular production to look at as well. It looked beautiful. The setting, the costumes, was a lovely production.
Yeah, we had a wonderful designer, Dickie Longhurst, who's no longer with us, but he designed the whole show and all the costumes. And I mean, the costumes, we've still got them. They are absolutely magnificent. Those huge, beautiful hats in the,
yes,
in the Ascot
scene. Ascotine, that's right. Yeah. That's right. No, it was great. My guest, incidentally, is Alistair Coburn, who's the music director and conductor of GNS and this particular production that we're talking about, The Pirates of Penzance, which opens on the 4th of July here at the Artscape Theatre. But talking about the Artscape Theatre, I just want to veer a bit here, Alistair, because they've just celebrated 55 years, just in May, I think it was, and you were on air here talking about your role here, because you were at Artscape for a long time, weren't you?
I joined, it was then KPAB, in 1988. I applied for a job, and I was appointed as the regional director for the Eastern Cape. In those days, of course, the Cape province was this huge province, including West End and Eastern Cape, and we had a satellite company in Port Elizabeth, and I ran that company for 5 years.
Oh, you were in Port Elizabeth?
I was in Port Elizabeth, and I ran the company from the PE Opera House. I then came back to Cape Town and transferred here to actually take over the running of the old KPAB Orchestra. And that's where I really got into orchestras, watching conductors work and so on, and got great inspiration in how to actually use, you know, my hands and the baton in conducting an orchestra by watching very, very good conductors. I also ran a musicals department here, which carried on until 1997, when everything had to fold. Ballet, opera, musicals, drama, everything became privatized due to the new ruling from government. And I was then transferred from the role of an artistic person into the technical field, and I became the operations director of Artscape, it was then called, of this theatre centre, and ran the technical thing until I retired in 2014.
Oh, so that's a long run that you had. Absolutely. And you retired in 2014.
Yeah. Well, I actually retired officially in 2012, but what we were doing massive renovations to this building, building the fifth floor onto the wings of the building and so on. And they asked me to stay on a contract and oversee the building works. So I was working then with the engineers, the architects, the builders, construction people and so on for 2 more years until 2014 when the work was finished.
And were you here when it was still called the Necker Milan?
I was, yeah. For right up until 1997, in fact. So the first 9 years of my life, this was the of my life with arts, with KPAB.
KPAB, yes.
This
K-Pab.
Was the Necker Milan, yes. We changed the name.
Because KPAB was based here at Artscape and has
always
been.
Yes, well, KPAB was the organization that ran the arts completely for the West, for the whole of Cape Province. Yeah. Like we had NAPAC in Durban, and we had PACT in Johannesburg. No, not in Johannesburg.
Pretoria.
Yeah, that's right. PAC-offs. You know all about them.
Yes, PACOFFs in Bloemfontein.
That's right, yeah.
The other thing, just I must say, if you visit Artscape at the moment, like when you come to see the Pirates of Penzance, in our foyer, the far end of the marble foyer, there are a whole lot of panels panels showing the building of the Artscape. Yes. And it really is interesting, and it was very well built, wasn't it?
This was the first major theatre of its kind in South Africa. Others followed afterwards. And, you know, I've had, when I was working here, we had big productions touring from overseas. I remember when we did Les Miserables for the first time, and there was this magnificent company from Australia that came out and did it. They were totally overwhelmed with the stage and the space, the huge side stages, the rear stages. We don't have this in Australia with our theatres at all. Mm. So from that point of view, it was an incredible theatre.
And its bits and pieces, the theatre was always there, the opera house was always there.
Yes.
And there were other sort of satellite bits.
Well, the third theatre was created just before I joined and was called the Arena. It was actually one of the big side stages of the theatre, and they closed it off and turned it into a little venue of its own. I think it seats about 120 people and became called the Arena.
The Arena, which is a lovely intimate theatre, isn't
very
it?
Nice if you want theatre, a beautiful theatre to play.
Yeah, too little, and it's
so we have the three main venues here.
Yeah, yeah. And many people have said, opera singers, that the Artscape Opera is a magnificent place to perform in.
For voice, it is wonderful. Yeah. It really works exceptionally well.
And that's without even thinking of the huge backstage, the side stages, rather, the wings and the dressing rooms, apparently.
What we did was, during those big renovations also, we had to increase the capacity of the opera house. It was up until that point, it was just about 1,100 seats. And the big musicals that were coming, they required a bigger auditorium. So we actually got architects in from overseas, from London, and they came and they gave an overview of what could be done. And then a local architect actually handled the local project, and we increased the capacity to 1,500.
It's quite a lot more seats,
yes,
isn't it?
A lot more seats.
But there's no sense of it being cramped, I don't think.
Well, we were very clever in the way we did it. We reconfigured the whole auditorium and the risers and so on. So the views were all fantastic. Seats were slightly narrower, aisles maybe fractionally narrower, but it increased the capacity fantastically.
Okay. Did that involve the theatre as well?
No, it was only the opera house.
Okay, yeah. So the theatre's pretty well as it was.
The theatre's as it was. They've just had new seats put in, but it's exactly the same capacity.
Okay. Mm. And that's where the pirates will be performed.
That's right.
Mm. Now, I see your next piece, Alistair, is one of Schubert's songs, one of his famous songs, Ganymede.
Yeah, I'm a very Catholic musician in that I love all types of music. Classical music is just, to me, part of my life. Mm-hmm. And whether it be symphonic music or chamber music or musicals, Gilbert and Sullivan, opera, ballet, I adore Schubert as a composer, and his songs are just quite magnificent. As a pianist, I've accompanied many, many of them, and I just adore the songs. Over 600 songs he wrote in his short life of 32 years. And this is a very beautiful song, Ganymede, sung by a fantastic tenor, Ian Bostridge, accompanied by Julius Drake.
Meines Busens lieblicher Mann. nach mir aus dem Nebeltal. Ich komme.
The tenor Ian Bostridge, the wonderful English tenor there, accompanied by Julius Drake, one of Schubert's fairly well-known songs, that Ganymede, and another choice of my guest on People of Note this week, brought to you by Peter Rin Productions, Alistair Coburn, who is the conductor of the Pirates of Penzance with GNS here in Cape Town, opening this coming Sunday, the 4th of July. And Alistair, you said that next year is the 80th anniversary. Are you going to be doing anything special?
We've got a couple of plans to do something really spectacular, maybe more than one thing. So I can't reveal what they are yet because we're still busy negotiating. We're applying for rights and so on to Delro for a big musical, and we'll be revealing that information in the near future. But I think it's going to be very exciting.
Oh, so no clues, no...
Not yet, I'm afraid, no.
Oh, dear. In the meantime now, when a production like this finishes, I remember when My Fair Lady finished, Nick Plummer still was working with us then. Mm-hmm. He said how sad everybody was. It was such a lovely production. Mm. Everyone was enjoying it so much. And then it's all over and you go back to your daytime jobs.
Yes, you know, that is always the moment of, oh, well, it was nice doing it, you know. I wish it could carry on for a bit longer. But everything has to come to an end, every good thing. And then you can look forward to the next one.
That is the thing. And, for example, when you finish Pirates, having, I think you said you began in March this year, working on it.
That's right.
Now, when you finished it on the 12th of July, you will have a break now.
We'll have a short break. We may do some sort of concert work towards the end of the year. We sometimes do that with small ensembles and so on. But certainly our next big production will only start rehearsing probably around about March, April next year again.
And what did you say that was going to be?
Rodney, don't try your luck.
Nearly caught you. But Alistair, I'm looking forward. I'm so looking forward to it. So congratulations. And just as I said earlier, but we weren't recording then, it's called GNS Cape Town.
That's right.
You don't call yourselves the Gilbert and Sullivan Society.
That name we changed a while ago.
So it's just GNS Cape Town. That's right. Mm. So there you are. And I've been talking to the musical director and conductor of GNS Cape Town, Alistair Coburn. You'll see him in the pit at the theatre when it opens on the 4th of July. So get yourselves tickets. It's a great show. It's called a family show as well. It's great fun for everybody. And tunes you can whistle and you can practice your patter songs like the Major General and also the Matter song from Radigore, which you've included. So thank you very much, Alison. Best of luck. I'm sure it'll go brilliantly. I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next year.
Thank you.
But you won't tell me. So anyway, we're ending with Saint-Saëns, I see.
Yes, I love the symphonic repertoire, and piano concertos are just the most amazing things. They really are, always so exciting. My wife adores the Saint-Saëns second piano concerto, and she just loves that second movement, that scherzo. So I thought, as a tribute to Margaret, who always is the person that has to put up with all my nonsense and being away from home so much, rehearsing and so on, this is a tribute to her.
Thank you, Alistair, thank you. People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.